Methodology Minutes is brought to you by the Methodology Center at Penn State, your source for cutting-edge research methodology in the social, behavioral, and health sciences.
Welcome to Methodology Minutes. Today, I am interviewing three scientists from Penn State University. These three, Dr. Ed Smith, Dr. Linda Caldwell, and Dr. Linda Collins, are collaborating on an exciting new research project that will examine the type 2 translation of an evidence-based intervention in South African schools. Ed is the Associate Director of the Prevention Research Center here at Penn State. Welcome, Ed.
Thank you.
Linda Caldwell is Professor of Recreation, Park, and Tourism Management and the Director of the College of Health and Human Development's Global Leadership Initiative at Penn State. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you.
And Linda Collins is Professor of Human Development and Family Studies and, of course, the Director of the Methodology Center. Welcome, Linda.
Thank you.
So, as I mentioned, I'm glad to have all of you here today. I wanted just to start by having one of you just give us a brief kind of overview of the project and maybe talk about some of the research questions that you will be addressing in this new research.
We're really excited about this project, and we've been in South Africa for about 10 years now, and our goal, we originally started with a conference to address adolescent risk behavior and health mm-hmm. promotion in South Africa.
Okay.
And from that initial conference, we've grown and have developed a wonderful partnership with collaborators from the University of the Western Cape and
sure.
Cape Town University in Cape Town, South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And over this time, we've grown a project that's called HealthWise South Africa. And the purpose of HealthWise South Africa generally is to reduce substance abuse, reduce sexual risk behavior,
mm-hmm.
and violence
mm-hmm.
in adolescents in South Africa.
Okay.
And so we have the curriculum called HealthWise South Africa, which is given to 8th and 9th graders. And over the years, we've had some success with that in terms of the outcomes that we're interested in as reducing risk for substance use, sexual risk, and violence.
Mm-hmm.
The unique part of HealthWise is that it's based in free time and leisure. Not only is it is a risk reduction program, it's also a promotion program and
right.
youth development program, which the idea is that through better use of leisure time,
mm-hmm.
the kids will reduce the risky behaviors.
Okay. And then how about the current project? How is it building on that?
The current project is, because we have had relative success in the past 5 years, we had a effectiveness trial in the past 5 years with good outcomes. This next project is to roll out the curriculum. We've been in nine schools, four
mm-hmm.
experimental, five comparison controlled schools.
Mm-hmm.
Now what we want to do is roll that out into 56 schools in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And
okay.
we've been in one, what's mixed race or colored area in South Africa right now.
Okay.
And we're going to roll that out to 56 schools in a variety of socioeconomic brackets.
Okay, great. Well, before we get into the details, I wonder if you could maybe just stop to mention maybe some of the collaborators that are working together on this project. It sounds like it's a large group of people who are all getting together and working together.
Yes, we have a huge collaborative team, and
mm-hmm.
this is one of those kinds of projects that couldn't be done without a lot of different areas of expertise.
Right.
Ed Smith, who is the co-PI on this project, and Linda Collins for her methodological expertise, John Graham for his statistical and methodological expertise,
mm-hmm.
and Damon Jones for his area and cost effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Penn State crew, essentially.
Okay.
And Mary Lai is the project coordinator on
oh.
this project as well.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
great.
Right. Right. And then from the South Africa side, from the University of the Western Cape, we've got Lisa Wegner, who has been with us all these years
mm-hmm.
working with us.
Mm-hmm.
Joachim Jacobs is a new person on the team. He's going to be actually running the on-the-ground part of the project.
Okay.
And Tanya Vergnagny, who is HIV AIDS director for University of
right.
Western Cape.
Uh-huh.
And then Catherine Matthews is at University of Cape Town, and she is a collaborator on the project as well.
Okay, wow, sounds like a very solid team.
Yeah, it's a big team.
Good. So you mentioned in your introduction of the project, a little bit about the HealthWise program. You mm-hmm. gave us some details of that. I wonder if you could back up a little bit and have a little bit more detail about what you have been doing and where you have been conducting those studies. Can you maybe describe some of the schools that HealthWise has been mm-hmm. conducted in South Africa?
Now, we're in an area called Mitchell's Plain, South Africa, which is geographically in an area known as the Cape Town Flats, mm-hmm. and it's outside of Cape Town proper, and okay. really was a product of the apartheid era, mm-hmm. where basically people were systematically removed from where they were living, and with the idea of dispersing them so that it would create economic dishevelment. So this area that we're in, as I mentioned, is more of a colored area, which is really, again, a product of the apartheid era, but it's people of mixed race.
Right.
And they're living in cinder block houses, not very well off financially. Mm-hmm. So it's of course, an area of great concern with HIV/AIDS and substance use. Mm-hmm. So we've been in those particular schools, and all of the 9 schools I'm in the study mm-hmm. have come from that area called Mitchell's Plain.
Okay.
But we will be expanding further than the Mitchell Plain area in this mm-hmm. new project.
Okay. So that maybe brings us to the next major point that we can talk about is how does this new project specifically build on the earlier studies? So the earlier studies have been found to be having an impact on student outcomes, and then now what do you propose to do in these next series of studies?
There's really two purposes of this next, we're calling it HealthWise 2. HealthWise 2 is intended to move forward in the sense of not just having a more diverse population than what we had in the first project. So now in the 56 schools, we're going to have probably about 3/4 of the population will be Black African, whereas the other one was almost all mixed-race African. Mm-hmm. And so there's that element to it in trying to make sure that it works with different populations. Mm-hmm. But then one of the key points of the project is to try to understand the impact of different variables on implementation quality. Mm-hmm. And so that's where this notion of a type 2 trial comes in, is that type 1 trials are really aimed at trying to develop a program that has some impact on the objective at hand. Mm-hmm. But the type 2 trials that we're working on are really more concerned with trying to assure that the program can be implemented with fidelity mm-hmm. when it's outside of the developer's hands.
Kind of outside of those very controlled conditions
exactly.
of the initial.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so that's why we have so many schools and basically 3 different conditions. Basically what we're thinking is that, and these are very, very practical questions. The questions are, how could you best take a program such as HealthWise, have it delivered effectively in schools, and do it in a way that's cost effective? Mm-hmm. And so we worked with the school system there to try to understand what would the school system do if they were trying to maximize their impact on teacher performance.
Okay.
And the way in which teachers are normally trained in this setting is that they have basically a day and a half of training on any new curriculum. Mm-hmm. And so on a Friday afternoon, they'll get trained, and then on a Saturday morning, they'll come back and get some more training.
Okay.
So that would be their standard way. Mm-hmm. And then the question is, could they actually do a better job if they had more training? Mm-hmm. And during HealthWise 1, we evolved to the point where we had an extended training period.
Beyond the day and a half.
Okay. And the way that ended up working out was there was usually 2 days of training up mm-hmm. front, and they took the teachers away to a decent place. There was a nice meal. Mm-hmm. And in some instances, they actually stayed overnight. And then after that 2-day training, they came back and trained them additionally later on during the year, mm-hmm. sometimes once mm-hmm. on some of the lessons dealing with free time, and sometimes a second time dealing with sexuality issues.
So these were new topics that were covered, not just recovering?
Well, they're sort of covered during the first 2 days,
okay.
but they need more attention. These are the 2 areas that we found
sure.
under HealthWise 1 the teachers were having the hardest time with.
Okay.
So what we're doing then in this HealthWise 2 is to vary that teacher training. That's mm-hmm. one of the variables we're going to vary. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we're going to vary, again, a very practical question that's raised by the schools, mm-hmm. is the question of how much support can teachers receive and how much can the schools afford to provide extra support to the teachers during the year.
Sure.
And so what we're going to do then is that variable, if you will, is going to be experimentally altered so that some schools will get increased teacher support.
Okay.
And some schools will get sort of standard support, if you will. The standard support is that if a teacher calls back to the trainer and says, look, I don't know how to do this, we're not going to not give them that answer. Of course we're going to do that. But in this instance, we're actually going to go out of our way to contact teachers, ask them if they need support, or to provide sort of clues to them about how to better deliver a lesson, and that sort of thing.
Sure. Okay.
And then the third variable that we're going to vary is the amount of support that the environment provides.
The school.
To the school. All right. Yeah, so in the school now, the question is, and we're not just talking posters or something such as that, but although posters will be an element of it. The idea is that the schools should be identified as a HealthWise school, that everybody in the school knows that the program exists, that the other teachers know about it, that the principal is trying to provide ongoing support for the teachers, and that parents will be involved, will try to engage parents. There are these boards that schools have in South Africa that are, they're not really governing boards, but they're advisory boards to the principals. And these are usually consisted of community members, family members, and other interested people. And so these boards will become part of this engaged school environment. And we're going to try to alter that also so that some schools will get this increased environmental support and some schools won't.
Okay. Very interesting design then to manipulate those three factors.
Yeah, and these three factors really are factors that in the long run could be self-sustaining.
Sure.
So any one of these we want to make sure are factors that are not things that we've dreamed up, but they're really potential ways that the school administration could in the long run provide better implementation quality of a program such as HealthWise.
So that seems to be kind of the main thrust of this, is that the idea of the science of implementation. How can we best address that question? What are the factors that impact implementation of programs?
Right. And so that is sort of the primary objective of this program. And it was interesting writing this grant because we said, okay, these are our primary hypotheses, but in the long run, we still want to see the impact on the kids.
Right.
So we have a set of secondary hypotheses that work through the primary hypotheses, that is the impact on the teachers. But then in the long run, does that also work its way down to the level of kid such that their behavioral changes are in the direction we want as well?
Okay. So this really sounds like it has potential to be a very impactful landmark study to understand all of these factors within one project.
We hope so, and it confuses the heck out of me.
Well, to help clear up some of that confusion, I assume that's why you brought Linda Collins on board to help kind of design this, and I'd like to turn next to Linda and ask a couple of questions. How did you propose to assess the impact of each of these factors?
We're in a really unique position here because we have 56 schools that we can assign to experimental conditions. And we decided that we wanted to conduct what's called a factorial experiment.
Sure.
And so for folks who aren't familiar with factorial experiments, in factorial experiments, you manipulate several independent variables at a time. And Ed mentioned what the experimental variables are that are being manipulated. There's three. There's the enhanced teacher training, the additional teacher support, and then the enhanced school environment. So each of those can be either on or off. And if you look at all the different combinations of those being on or off, that's actually eight experimental conditions. And so this would be called, for people who do know about factorial experiments, a 2x2x2 factorial experiment. Now, there's kind of a prevailing sentiment out there in people who conduct experiments in the field that you can't even consider conducting a factorial experiment in the field because there's too many experimental conditions to keep track of.
Right.
And one of the things that I hope we do, and I think we will do in this study, is just prove that that's wrong, because it is possible to conduct, if you're careful, to conduct eight experimental conditions. And this is going to enable us to learn so much more than the alternative. The alternative would be to, and this is, I think, probably what most people would do, to use a design that's often called a RCT, randomized controlled trial, where in one condition each of these three factors would be turned on. So half the schools would get the enhanced teacher training and the additional teacher support and the enhanced school environment, mm-hmm. and then the rest of the schools would get none of those things. Mm-hmm. Well, that would enable us to compare the effect of all of the three factors together, mm-hmm. but it would not enable us to look at the individual effect of each of the factors.
Right.
And it also would not enable us to see whether any of the factors interacted with each other. And by interacted sure. with each other, I mean one factor, say, has a much larger effect in the presence of another factor.
Oh, okay.
So maybe sure. maybe two of these factors have a synergistic effect. Mm-hmm. So the two together is perhaps much more effective than just what you might expect by adding up the main effects.
Sure.
So we're going to get a lot more information in exchange mm-hmm. for taking the trouble to conduct 8 experimental conditions instead of
okay.
2. And so I think that the contribution to science is going to be a lot greater here because we're conducting a factorial experiment.
Okay. With so many conditions, did you have issues with power? I can't remember exactly how many schools you mentioned you had, 56?
That's a great question.
So.
No, we don't. And the reason is that factorial experiments actually are extremely powerful for certain kinds of research questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I think another reason why people don't consider using factorial experiments is because there's a myth that factorial experiments require huge numbers of subjects. Now, in this case, an entire school is a subject.
Mm-hmm.
But that, in most cases, is not true. Now, it depends on the research question, and the design always has to be appropriate for the research question. And you can't really talk about mm-hmm. the power of a design in absolute terms.
Right.
But for the kinds of research questions that we're asking here, suppose we decided to do 3 separate experiments, one to look at just enhanced teacher training, one to look at just the additional teacher support, and then third one just to look at the enhanced school environment,
mm-hmm.
that would take 3 times as many schools as this one factorial experiment
mm-hmm.
takes. So that's an example of how efficient factorial experiments
sure.
can be in terms of use of research subjects. So that was really seemed like the way to go here.
Sure, it does sound like it. Sounds like a very exciting project. When do things get started and get off the ground? Have they already gotten started?
They've started.
Actually, we're modifying our application a bit because we realized that trying to get things running right away with 56 schools was going to be too much of a challenge.
Sure.
And on top of that, we were a bit concerned about the fact that this program has never been attempted in a Black African school.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've decided to do during the first year mm-hmm. is we're going to pick 2 schools that are representative of the kinds of schools that we will be in.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, those schools are about ready to be signed on board.
Mm-hmm.
And in those schools, we're going to run what is probably the most difficult of the conditions, and that is where they receive all 3 of these characteristics.
Right.
And there's 2 things that are going to happen there. One is that it will help us get sharper with mm-hmm. making sure that we can keep these things unique and separate.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second is that it'll give us an opportunity to make sure that it works with teachers in these different environments, which
mm-hmm.
are usually a little bit more mm-hmm. challenging than the environments that we're in before.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it'll all work out.
Mm-hmm.
We've also added, because we have to monitor the teaching process,
mm-hmm.
we're also going to try out our system of doing that monitoring,
okay.
which involves teachers' logs, teachers' surveys, and teacher observations.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've also modified our data collection instrument with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to end up using netbooks with audio hookups.
Oh,
and we haven't used that before. In
mm-hmm.
the past, we've used handhelds.
Right.
And so this will be a little bit more sophisticated. And I think this first year is really going to be a great way for us to make sure that all these pieces are working.
Right.
And that'll begin in January.
Okay. Wow.
And then the following January is when we kick off the big trial.
Okay. So
I just want to add something about, I think one of the things that we're very concerned about in terms of methods
mm-hmm.
is the observation component. Because
okay.
in this culture and environment, it's going to be very difficult to logistically set up ways in which to observe the teachers, and because that's the gold standard
mm-hmm.
in understanding implementation quality,
mm-hmm.
we really need to make sure that we understand how best to work with the teachers in the schools and what kind of equipment to observe the teachers.
Sure.
The other reason that it's important for this first year sort of semi-pilot is that the curriculum has not ever been used with Black South Africans either.
Right.
And so we don't know to the extent that that may need to be modified.
So there was a level of adaptation, I assume, before.
And then big process
maybe
of
ongoing
as
you go forward.
Yeah. And in fact, we're ramping up a couple of the lessons where we've identified potential issues that we need to do a better job with some of the lessons currently.
Okay.
We're doing a little bit more with those. So there's just all sorts of reasons for trying out sort of a semi-pilot first.
Sure. Okay. It does sound very reasonable, I think, to kind of get that ironed out first.
Right.
Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more about this and seeing some results.
We are too.
Yeah.
Soon.
Yeah, definitely.
I'll be very interested in hearing more.
Thanks.
So, before I end, I can't let you all go without hearing a little bit. I understand there's an interesting story that kind of provided the impetus for the three of you, at least, collaborating. Can one of you offer that story?
Well, we like to take vacations together, and we were on nerds on vacation.
Yeah.
And we were on a boat in the Galapagos, and I remember I was on a deck chair. We were on our way between islands, and Ed came up to me with a little notebook and said, Linda and I were just talking about this study we want to do, and we were wondering, do you think we could do a factorial experiment?
And so, and Linda jumped out of
his
chair and said, yes!
Yes, we can!
Those are the magic words.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, so we spent some time on, on that boat while we were going to the next island talking about that, and that's actually where we designed the study. It's, I think, pretty much the same experiment that we designed that boat.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, and I had previously traveled, before that trip, I traveled to South Africa with Ed and Linda and went with them to Mitchell's Plain and had a chance to see for myself. We even visited a school there.
Sure.
So that, I think, has helped me to understand some of what they're up against when they're in the field. I don't go out in the field myself very often, being a pointy-headed methodologist. I don't do that, but I think it was really helpful to me to have some exposure to that. And I do, at some point in the course of this study, I do hope to go back.
Sure. Well, thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed talking to you and learning more about this project. And as I said, I look forward to hearing more about it.
Great. Thanks. Thanks for the opportunity.
You have been listening to Methodology Minutes, brought to you by the Methodology Center at Penn State, your source for cutting-edge research methodology in the social, behavioral, and health sciences. This podcast is available on iTunes and at methodology.psu.edu.